Right then, now for a true modern tale that should surely belong to the Dark Ages, if anywhere at all. An estimated 27 million people today, according to the UN, are enslaved. 27 million. Not that even one slave would be acceptable. Pastor Eddie Bjarne's doing his bit, though, to fight a seemingly unstoppable tide. And we can introduce him sitting alongside me right now. Thanks very much for coming in.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
Perhaps we should start with a broad definition of the types of modern-day slavery that we see, because as soon as we mention this word, images from the past come into our minds.
Right. I guess today, the most common broad types of slavery would entail work, like sweatshop factories, having children, even work brick kilns in India by the millions. There are children who are forced to pick cocoa beans, which we make our coffee and chocolates from. So work is one broad area. Another broad area would be war. There are a lot of child soldiers who are recruited, illegally kidnapped, forced beyond their will to fight in just horrendous wars in different parts of Africa and also Latin America. And that has been a growing element of concern as well. But probably the biggest and most known area of human trafficking today and slavery would be sex trafficking. Women and children who are forced into the sex industry in literally every country around the world. And that probably comprises of the most number of people who are enslaved today.
So in many cases, though, people are literally slaves to their job. They are in some way indebted to their enslavers, no matter what the kind of enslavement is, from sexual to just basically getting a loan from someone and not being able to pay it back. In some way, they've got some sort of debt that can never be paid off.
Unfortunately, that is the mindset for a lot of people. But for the average person who, let's say, does feel enslaved to their job or to their credit card debt or whatever, the average person, if they choose to, they could walk away, quit their job today and walk away. And things are relatively safe for their lives and their families. But for the majority of the people that we're talking about who are actually human trafficked or in slavery, they don't have that choice. They cannot, if they wanted to today, walk away from their job. Of the millions who are in sexual slavery today, they are, in their mindset, indebted to something which they do not know is actually an illegal debt. They don't have to pay it off, actually. But the traffickers, the pimps, or the people who are controlling them, they have brainwashed them or threatened them to the point where they think they have to pay off this debt to this person. So that's a big distinction that we have to make.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, what really is a metaphor for most of us is a reality.
That's right.
For those people,
yeah,
when we talk about being a slave to your job, for example.
Correct, yeah.
In other cases, though, and many, by what you were saying, we see vulnerable children taken to work at not only industrial sites, even horrific though it is to say, as sex slaves. How does that process work in terms of becoming indebted, and what is the abduction process often like?
Sure. It does actually change depending on the region of the world. For example, in this country, for South Korea, a lot of them begin as late elementary school students, junior high students, so early teens, preteen age period. They start off as runaways from home. They're looking for shelter. They're looking for a job. They post online, I ran away, I need some help. And that's where the traffickers, these day and age, they really much scour the internet at those types of chat rooms for young children, young teens. And then they offer them food, clothing, a place to stay, and then they get lured into that type of lifestyle. The older age brackets of women usually fall debt to loan sharks. They're heavily indebted due to various reasons. It's usually because of a tragic medical issue for either personally or for family, or bankruptcy, or there's usually a personal crisis. All of a sudden, they've accumulated a huge amount of debt. They cannot get a proper loan at a bank, so they're forced to go to a loan shark because that's the only place that they could get money. But these loan sharks are also tied to the sex industry here. And so then, in order for these women to pay off, quote-unquote, pay off their debt, they're forced to work as sex slaves. But some of the women that we've actually interviewed who've come out of this, they've shared how some of the interest rates that they were given the moment that they signed their name was over 365% interest. And so realistically, they could never pay that off. And again, technically, that's an illegal form of loan and debt. But these women, because they're so vulnerable, they're unaware of the illegal aspect of it.
And you said this happens all over the world. Here in Korea, the government has highlighted illegal loans as being an area that they're looking to not only clamp down on, but really legitimize aspects of the underground economy so that not only can people be protected, but also so those funds can find their way into the state coffers,
right,
so that more people can benefit from welfare programs and so on. It's a cycle, obviously. But speaking about the slavery element, are we seeing that on any kind of significant scale within Korea?
Oh, yeah. Well, I work with quite a number of aftercare partners who have rescued women and children out of the sex industry and sexual slavery situations. And depending on the study, you can never have a true accurate number, but the range that we're looking at in terms of sex slavery just in South Korea alone is about 300,000 to over 1 million women and children who are in sexual slavery just in South Korea alone.
You know, we have to descend to another level, although it's all just as bad as each other, but it's horrifying, I think, for any parent in particular to contemplate the notion of child sexual slavery. You said, though, you included them in the figure for Korea.
If you were to go to some of these red light districts, they would not be seen, obviously, in the windows or in the brothels on the public view, but that age category between the ages of about like 10 to 13-ish is actually when most of these women first started in this industry. And so it is an unfortunate reality. And also, what was in the news within the past several months is South Korean men are the number one child sex tourist in every single country throughout Southeast Asia. In Cambodia, in Vietnam, in Thailand, in the Philippines. And I have partners who work in a similar field in each of these countries, and they verify that the Korean men who go there for quote-unquote working trips or golf trips, what they do at night is horrific in terms of seeking this type of activity with children.
Well, you are involved with a film, Nefarious, which is part of your own efforts to just try to raise awareness, to try and do something to change the culture, presumably, of that helps and supports sexual slavery. And
right.
Slavery full stop.
Right. So there's multiple things that we do to help raise awareness. Nefarious is one of them. It's a documentary on sex trafficking around the world. But South Korea is not mentioned within that film. And so as a result, we're actually making our own documentary specifically on South Korea and the issue of sex trafficking. That should be out later this year. And I recently published a book called Justice Awakening. And that was translated into Korean. The Korean version just came out, but the English version will be out early next year. And so these are different ways that we're trying to help the public become aware of what is really going on and what they could do with practical steps to help.
I mean, on one level, that could be just aware of where you're buying your chocolate from, because you talked about the cocoa bean trade, for example.
Right.
But when it comes to something like pedophilia, how do you change that kind of culture? Abraham Lincoln was famously quoted as saying that those who deny freedom to others deserve it not for themselves. But how do you root out those people, especially if there's so many that it's indicative of something beyond in just individuals?
Right. You know, and that's where I think the partnership with the faith-based community comes into play. I'm a pastor by my occupation currently right now, and I really see the root cause of a lot of these things as spiritual, as evil, as moral issues. The lust of the customers drives this industry. The greed of the traffickers and the pimps also drives these industries. So I see it as a moral and spiritual issue that needs to be addressed on that level as well. You could put every single person in jail who has been involved in this, but incarceration doesn't change a human heart. And so we really want to help engage and connect these moral and social evils with the spiritual sources that we see it really stemming from. And so we want to invite the faith-based community to also be involved.
Well, the pessimist in me is fearful on that part because of the secular direction of society. But the optimist wants to wish you the best of luck and hope that you are able to make inroads into this issue. Thanks very much for coming in to talk to us about your efforts.
Sure. Thank you.
That is Pastor Eddie Byun.